Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.2. Yeah, we've got football back, but first we need to trash talk some Nebraska. Lo and behold, there is football. Or was there already football last week when we did this?
Was it official? I don't think it was official.
It wasn't quite official. Yeah. That's right.
It was at 96%.
Now. Yes, it was like one of those win probability trackers that was creeping up towards 99%. But the Lions do exist, folks. So
we didn't boy, do know. They ever.
We didn't know now. I'm not even, like, my timeline is just full of Lions stuff, even though I've never sought that out. Just because they're so Lions.
Four 10-point blown leads in a row now.
That is incredible. Especially in the NFL where, I mean, it's the NFL. Their talent's a little bit more even and you don't have as much of a comeback opportunity.
Theoretically.
Well, unless you're playing the Lions.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, let's not spend our time talking about the Lions.
We should thank our sponsors. Those are Underground Printing, The Bose Store, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, The Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, University of Michigan Alumni Association, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, The Phil Klein Insurance Group, and Fuego Box.
So the Big Ten has announced an 8-game football schedule with a bonus game at the back end of that for everybody in the league. So on Championship Saturday, you'll have a championship game, and then they're going to evenly match everybody down the divisions with as long as they don't have any rematches, so that everybody gets a 9th game in. This, of course, creates the possibility there will be a 7-versus-7 game to determine the worst team in the league, which is a brilliant idea. Why didn't we? We should have done that every year, and the loser of that game gets the land grant trophy.
And gets relegated to the MAC.
I have been advocating this for years, okay? This is not a new idea. This is the Seth. You know, I can pull out my spreadsheets where I described how the season was going to work.
The worst place game is going to be my favorite thing ever, I have a feeling.
It's weird college football Twitter is going to be all over this game.
Even if it's at, 6 a.m. If they're trying to put all of these just, back-to-back in Indianapolis or something.
People are still complaining that
they're not going to do that, but it'd be amazing.
Yeah, it would be.
People are still complaining that Wisconsin and Ohio State don't play. I'm like, yes, they do.
Shut up, Seth. So I posted something on Saturday, which I didn't know it was Saturday, but I posted it and I'm like, why are there people playing football and soccer today? And it's like, oh, it's Saturday. In any case, I'm very much in the dude mode. What day is it? Because of coronavirus. But in any case, I posted a column about why I thought the Big Ten had pretty much done this the right way. After the announcement, there were a lot of overheated takes from folks like Christine Brennan and Jameel Hill. Pat Forty had kind of a weird one, if you want to read a weird column. And, I mean, I think all those takes are wrong. And this is because point of contact testing means you go in, you got the coronavirus from the community, you find out that you have it, and then you're isolated. So no longer is the act of practicing or playing football making the pandemic worse. You might be able to argue that it makes it better because you're finding infected people and then isolating them. I don't know how far that goes, but once you have this point of contact testing, a lot of the concerns I had about playing football go away.
Yeah, I mean, I agree in that, once you brought everybody back to campus, now at that point, you might as well go forward with football.
I don't think that the two things are particularly related, honestly. I think that the NCAA said that without students on campus, we're not going to play. And that's backwards, even if you are looking at it from a student athlete. I'm trying not to use that term, an athlete health and safety perspective, right? Because if they're on campus because their activities don't make sense in an online context, then of course a student shouldn't be there because they have the corona and they're going to give it to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's also tangled because they're still pretending amateurism is a thing. But it's
yeah,
just,
then that's exactly right.
Yeah. So it's hard to be like, I don't know, I have a hard time saying they did a good job because I'm deeply cynical about this entire process and kind of think they looked at like, oh, the other leagues are kind of getting away with it. And we also did a smarter thing, which was to not just pull through and try the like LSU herd immunity thing. At least we haven't heard any reports of that from Big Ten teams.
I'm trying to give them some sort of credit, partially because it's the presidents and the chancellors who are making this call and not necessarily like the people directly making the money off of it. Like, these are people who are representing their universities and trying to do what's best for their universities. Now, if you're Ohio State's president, you're doing football is the only thing that your people care about. But, you know, I think the people who are making their decisions, who changed their decisions, I should say, the ones who were against playing before and changed to saying it's okay, made their decision based off of these safety concerns are now handled. Football is not a bad thing in and of itself. I think some of the bad faith arguments out there are really just based in people shouldn't be playing football, period.
And see, I have a tough time being that credulous when, like, Michigan's campus is a mess because their president kind of screwed everything up. And he's one of the people who changed his mind about this. And we're supposed to think that he did it for good reasons. Like, I mean, you know, ideally, yeah. I don't think this is a horrible, horrible thing that they're doing. At the same time, do I think they did it for, like, righteous reasons? Nah, I don't.
I wouldn't say it's righteous. I would say that if I was in charge of the way this had played out, I don't think it would have played out a whole lot differently. Like, it wasn't a good idea to play until you had this testing regime in place, and now that it is, I think it's fine. So, another thing I think we have to reckon with is, because especially since we've been talking about how, you know, players need to be paid and this is an exploitative system for a long time, I still believe that, but also when, you know, the football went away, there were a large number of furious football players.
Part of the reason I'm okay with this is how strong the push was from players to want to play. And now that it's safe enough where that seems like a decision that falls within the realm of reason, then I think that opinion becomes important. It was less important when a season seemed like a guaranteed way to cause a large spread or event.
Yeah.
Well, and the NCAA granted everybody an extra year of eligibility. So if you want to sit out, I think they've put the proper incentives in place where if you sit out, you're not going to be punished for that.
And yeah, I think
that
was an important thing.
Except by the
tricky
depth chart on your own team.
Yeah, well.
Because that's how football works. So let's like be real about that. I don't think that's a great option for players who want to continue their football careers in a way that maximizes their ability.
I mean, there's always the possibility you could transfer out. But yeah, like the voluntary workout, I don't know what to call it, paradox kind of comes into effect there.
Yes.
And the other half of this is that the Big Ten is going to hold anyone with a positive COVID test out for 21 days. They're going to do what seems like every heart check in the book on anyone who tests positive. And a lot of people, even a guy like Bomani Jones, who I think is a really smart guy, said that this made it seem like the Big Ten was using these guys as guinea pigs. And I feel like I feel like COVID is obviously a dangerous thing, but one thing it is unlikely to do is damage someone's heart in a way that is not detectable. And when myocarditis is found, people are not going to play. That's fine. I just don't think you can expect that this virus is going to act in a way that other viruses don't.
I mean, the language that the Big Ten put in their release did not help dissuade people from the you're using your players as test subjects conclusion. I'll put it that way. I don't have the wording in front of me, but it was not good. And we are talking about like we're collecting data from the heart damage that this could cause players. Like, just by saying that you're going to do that, I understand that there are benefits from it, and if you're going to be testing these players for myocarditis, you might as well also collect data from it and have it go towards something good. But you are saying that your players are at risk for this and that you're using them to collect data. So to say that they're test subjects, I don't find that entirely unfair.
I kind of do. Because what's going to happen is you get COVID, you go through all these battery of tests, and then they're going to make the testing data available to scientists so that they can do something useful with that.
It's a result of them getting it when they may not have gotten it if they didn't play football.
I don't necessarily think that's the case, because with the daily testing that they're going to do, intra-team spread seems like a unlikely thing to happen, and it'll be community spread that brings it to the football players.
I don't know how easy that is to say, considering how quickly those outbreaks happen, and we've seen that with other teams in college football. We've seen that with Major League Baseball. We've seen spreads happen quickly.
Well, but, I mean, the idea is that with this testing, you take a test in the morning, 15 minutes or an hour later, you get the results. Anyone who tests positive doesn't practice until they get a confirmation test that's either yes or no. So either you have a false negative, which I think these tests are slanted against. Hello, cat. or you have a situation where there's a bunch of football players living in an off-campus apartment giving it to each other, which is a possibility, but it doesn't seem like that's any different than any other house on campus, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's where I'm saying, like, once you bring the players, once you have brought students back to campus, then you might as well do this. That's why I think it ties in.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some sort of balance level, right, where you want to keep your R below one. And every activity you undertake as a civilian, it's like, well, what is this doing to the society-wide R? And is this worth doing? Is it going to get some groceries worth doing? Well, got to do that. You don't have to play football, but I think we've seen with a lot of leagues around the world, it is possible to do this without having a lot of spread.
Well, the incentive for the players who are, you know, if I get COVID now, or if I expose my teammates, then it's going to have a major effect on this thing I care about. That effect alone is probably going to prevent them from having very much contact with the student body at large.
Well, it depends on the school.
I'm about to say, ideally, yeah. But we are dealing with 105 college-aged people.
Well, yeah, but Ohio That's true, State, but Alabama, yeah. They're going to get a ton. Rutgers, I don't know about that. I mean, Michigan's done a good job so far in terms of releasing data. The data that they release say that they've had a pretty low positivity rate. But then you have things like Wisconsin, where they have 40 football players and staff who test positive. Important to note that this exists in the before time, before they can actually test everybody, and there's probably a lot of intra-team spread there. It seems like a situation where, as Bill Connolly said on ESPN, there's no clear, correct answer. So be careful. No.
Yeah.
Be careful. Try to get it done. Try to have a non-farcical season. You know, I think a lot of the complaints about the Big Ten being just motivated by greed is like, you know, having football around, I think, is a worthwhile thing. And I think if the danger level is low enough that we're just back to the regular dangers of having football, then we've made a choice as a society to be like, okay, that's a thing that we can do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And like, obviously part of it's motivated by greed. It's always been that way. It's college football. Why are we surprised by this? Nothing has really changed. Like, that part of the argument seems completely in bad faith to be, where it's just, you know, of course, yeah, Money is a motivating factor here. It has always been. There's never really been ethical consumption of college football if you're taking it super seriously. So, like,
well, you might there, as well. There was like, a period in the past where the money was not absurd.
No. From being the past guy, the money got absurd pretty fast. Like, you have to go past 1900
Yeah, like
early
Notre Dame teams were handing out cash, like you know, it got big fast.
What I'm saying is
amateurism is a sham, so we might as well roll with it at this point. I think that's about like the best attitude I can take towards like heading into this football season with a positive attitude. And I'm legitimately excited to watch football. Like that part of it, unequivocally, I'm excited for.
And I do trust Ohio State's players to stay away from campus.
But all right, that seems like a time for a break. We're going to have a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk actual football things instead of meta football things.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. Dum, da-da-da-dum,
da-da-da-dum. During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
Catch on the lights on the reflectors of our bikes. Said you kids know what time it is.
All right, actual football things. Now that there's certainly going to be football, I think we're set on who's coming back and who's not. Jalen Mayfield is back in. Nico Woo-hoo. Collins is not. Ambry Thomas is not. So,
some of that's pretty alarming. I think mostly, especially the Ambry Thomas bit, I would say. Yeah.
I don't think Ambry Thomas was ever coming back. I think that was 100% Michigan calling, being like, "Hey."
He did mention something in a podcast with John Jansen where he was he made it sound like it was a possibility. So
the way the quotes from his mom came out, made it seem like that was maybe Ambry being nice to John Jansen and letting him down easy.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you had Jalen Mayfield's dad saying, absolutely not, there's no way. And then a couple of days later, it's like, yeah, he came back. So on both sides of this, it's been a little bit unreliable narrator time. Machine gets a right tackle back who's a first-round prospect who did a pretty good job of shutting out Chase Young last year. Obviously a pretty big deal when you don't get anyone else from your offensive line back. So thumbs up to that. Losing Nico Collins. I spent the whole offseason screaming, throw it to Nico. The whole wide receiver preview and Hail the Victors is throw it to Nico.
You know.
And now there's no one
the
to throw it to.
The cover of Hail the Victors is Nico
Collins. I mean, there
Collins.
Are people to throw it to, but not quite in that That's same true. Fashion.
No. I mean, if we're looking at a real adoption of speed and space, I think Michigan will be okay. I mean, we've talked a lot on the site and in Hail the Victors about how Ronnie Bell's 2019 is underrated because he was targeted by a lot of almost catchable passes that weren't actually catchable. Like, I think if he moves up to the number one slot on the outside, Michigan will be fine. We've been big fans of Cornelius Johnson since he committed. You know, the depth there is something you start to wonder about, but you know, I think with Josh Gattis trying to bring in the fastest guy in the country every year, that you're going to be okay.
I feel like you can maybe just hit on one of those guys as at the very least, a dude who's going to stretch the defense, whether or not he's particularly productive.
I mean, there's been a lot of Roman Wilson hype early in spring, and I don't know, not spring, fall.
Whatever. I believe he's running past people.
Whatever season it happens to be.
What year is it?
Yeah. But Roman Wilson is a guy who could just show up and be faster than everybody, and that should be enough to make him a useful guy in year one.
It does affect the version of speed and space that Josh Gattis, that we all thought Josh Gattis was going to come here with, is like that Joe Moorhead bombs away version. So losing Nico Collins when your vertical threats are supposed to be your main threats is a pretty big deal for this offense. I don't know if they have someone like that.
But the one thing they do have still, and a guy who showed a little bit of promise in this area last year, I'm not sure if there's been a ton of fall hype around him, although they haven't even put on pads yet, but Eric Gall is a pretty oversized, you know, receiver type that you could stick in the slot and do some interesting things with. So maybe they start, you know, kind of putting him in the Gesicki role and just using him as more of a downfield or at least up the seam threat. Cause Penn State had no problem with, you know, just having that dude go box guys out 40 yards downfield. That can turn into your vertical offense if you need it.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good idea that I had not considered. All is interesting because he's skinny, and you're like, all right, this guy's actually a wide receiver that we're in denial about. But then you watch him block, and he gets after it.
Not Gesicki like there.
No, not like there's, you know, the Gesicki, the Funchess type tight ends who are just really big wide receivers. And that's not all. I mean, he's skinny, but he wants to get after it. So he's a guy who I think you have some matchup flexibility with. You can flex him out. You can put him in line. And maybe that's not ideal, but he'll get the job done enough so that if you have a personnel mismatch, because they've got a nickel package out there for him that you could do some work with. So he'll be one of the guys who benefits, I think, the most from Collins departing, and then, you know, Bell, and then the two slots, Giles Jackson and Sainer still are going to be guys who you're looking at to significantly increase production with stupid little passes along the line of scrimmage that are easy.
Probably from many different pre-snap alignments with those two guys.
You know, we're mentioning all, but, you know, Eubanks is actually still on this roster. And I know last year he became like a short merchant, but that guy used to be all bombs.
That's true. And then you have Schoonmaker, who flashed athleticism uncommon for his size as well. So you might get some production out of that tight end spot that you didn't get last year. Speaking of stupid little passes around the line of scrimmage, Joe Milton is your anointed starter. Starter by default after Dylan McCaffrey transferred out. And there's no amount of practice hype that can make me feel good about the fact that Michigan's depth chart now has two quarterbacks on it. And that's it.
That's like, fair. I do feel encouraged about like the trajectory of the Milton hype, which was starting long before the McCaffrey is exiting rumbling started.
I don't know.
But the Cade McNamara being the number two is not the ideal situation.
If Cade McNamara hype started right around the same time as the McCaffrey might leave.
Yeah, that one felt more like a direct reaction to like, Dylan's gone. But the Milton stuff was happening early enough where, first of all, I imagine I don't see why Dylan McCaffrey would transfer unless he felt like he was losing his grip on the job. So I buy the Milton hype. The McNamara hype and the depth, I don't buy the McNamara hype as much, and I'm obviously scared that Michigan is one injury away from having a quarterback.
So I go back to last year's hype. You remember what last year's hype was?
That Shea Patterson was spending a lot of time on the golf course?
That was not the hype. That's kind of the opposite of hype. So last year's hype was that McCaffrey was neck and neck with Patterson and that they were going to split snaps, which never happened. And so to go from that to, oh, now it's Joe Milton. Joe Milton is going to be the guy. You see guys transform over the course of a single year sometimes, but you know, you're looking at that over the course of an entire college football season where there's 60 programs and some guy's going to burst through. And if you're looking at it specifically for your one program and your one guy, it's pretty unlikely. And I feel like,
I don't know if I go with pretty unlikely. I mean, Milton was a top 100 guy who was noted for his massive potential that was going to take a couple years to develop. He's kind of on track.
Yeah, he's kind of big Denard in that kid.
I don't know if I go there, but
the staff was nuts about him, and you were not expecting anything from him his freshman year, except for maybe comes in and does something cool. But like, this staff thought he was one of the top two quarterbacks on their board that year, and that year they had some crazy good quarterbacks on their board.
That's true. It's also true that from what we've seen of him in spring games and on the field, he had a really long way to go.
Small sample. Real small sample.
Small sample, but small sample for a reason, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, but like, yeah. This was always a guy who was going to have like a long way to go and you hope things clicked. It seems like there's a decent chance that things clicked, at least to the extent that... like, so it certainly scared off a guy who thought he was about to, like, walk into a starting job because he had been anointed.
That feels like something where either you made a mistake by not keeping the quarterback battle open enough to prevent that, or...
I don't know what you're supposed to do if a guy in practice just looks better than the other dude. Like, these guys have eyes.
Yeah, but, like, we're a nation of people who delude ourselves into believing we're better than we are. We could leverage that.
Well, I'm with you there. I do want to give some credit to football players for having some self-awareness. I think they have more of that than a lot of us give them credit for.
Well, the thing is, you know, McCaffrey in brief appearances as the backup and in that Wisconsin game looked like a functional Big Ten quarterback. You know, he was really good making the reads. He was a work in progress as a passer, but you could see that he was able to anticipate certain throws that weren't open then that would be open when the ball got there. Like, it seems pretty unlikely to me that Milton just blazed past this guy. And so when...
I don't find that unlikely. He was a highly touted quarterback with a massive ceiling.
I'm aware of that, but if you just look at kind of the way they felt on the field, this feels like a situation where Milton is either going to be an okay quarterback who throws 12 to 15 interceptions, or he's going to be a bad quarterback who throws 12 to 15 interceptions.
I think that leaves out one of the totally reasonable outcomes for Joe Milton, which is that he's extremely good and opens up a vertical passing element that this team didn't have.
Yeah, see, that doesn't seem like part of the reasonable outcomes to me.
I'm thinking more kind of like sophomore year or freshman year Henny, where this guy has a bomb. He can get the ball to people, and he is being very controlled. That he's like they're keeping him within the function of the offense. I think our best case scenario going into the season was Joe Milton, who has the higher ceiling and an extra year of eligibility, past Dylan McCaffrey, and then you still have McCaffrey on as like a decent backup.
Yeah.
You know, this is now the possibly the best case scenario minus Dylan McCaffrey sticking around
So long as Joe Milton stays perfectly healthy.
Right. And, you know, if we have Ohio State's luck, maybe that happens.
I mean, Ohio State hasn't even had that luck. They've had Haskins come in the Michigan game when people have been hurt. They've had Cardale Jones. Like, in modern college football, it's really hard to expect one quarterback to get all the way through a season. And losing Dylan McCaffrey, I think, means that it's quite likely we see Cade McNamara at some point.
Yeah, so, I'm concerned about that. I will put that in. I mean, I'm in agreement with you on that. It's I think Milton has a range of outcomes that's wider than mediocre to bad by a lot.
Well, we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. It just seems like it's way too far to come in 1 year.
It is concerning that you're throwing out a new quarterback who is not at all used to being on the field behind a completely rebuilt offensive line that, you know, lost its entire interior. And, you know, I guess you get one tackle back now, but even that tackle is a redshirt sophomore. So you can.
Well, and if you look at Milton, like, his ability as a runner is not, doesn't really help you that much. Like, it's possible that he's going to be able to give you a little bit of Tebow stuff on short yardage, but he's a big downgrade from McCaffrey in that department. And that's a really nice crutch to have for a young quarterback, is to be able to pick up some first downs with your feet. And that just doesn't seem to be something that Milton really has done a lot. I think he rushed for 200 yards as a senior in high school. He had that one run against Wisconsin where he was just kind of weaving around, but that was after Wisconsin had given up ridiculous touchdowns to Patterson.
Michigan is not allowed to say, because they have to recruit down there, is that Milton's high school coaching was leaving a little bit to be desired.
I mean,
and that's kind of why he came in raw. And, like, I think his ability outstrips anything that you can get from his high school film. Trying to say this as, like, lightly as I can without saying, like,
he can have bad coaching and still complete half his passes as a high school senior. You know, that's something where you look at the numbers, and historically, quarterbacks who do not complete half their passes as a high school senior don't do that well in college. So I think there's a lot of reasons for concern. Obviously, guys got a huge upside, but I feel like we might be benefiting from that upside in 2021 and maybe 2022, and this year is going to be a little bit rough.
I wanted to know what your guys' thoughts are, because Michigan's kind of making it look like, of all these Ed Warner guys that we've had in, two walk-ons might be starting on the offensive line. That might be changed now with Mayfield coming back, but Andrew Vistardis and Griffin Corrigan both seem to
be. Yeah, if Griffin Corrigan starts on week one, I'll be pretty surprised.
I mean, he was more of a Glasgow style walk on than a pure walk on. He had an offer from Oregon State, and I think his parents could afford to just.
Have so many scholarship bodies. Zach Zinter's getting a lot of talk on 247. Like, Rumler's around, Barnhart's around, Carpenter's around. There's just enough, even Honigford and Filiaga, like, there's just enough bodies out there where I'd be surprised if they had multiple walk-ons on that line.
Yeah, well, Vistardis is a center, and he's been playing center, and so that's something where it's definitely feasible. I mean, he's got the size. He came into the Michigan State game and looked passable.
Yeah, and that's the spot where, like, having an experienced guy is really a difference maker, as opposed to other positions where you probably are looking more for the physical ability.
And they were going to start Zach Carpenter there, who's a freshman, so I almost feel more comfortable with the walk-on at this point.
Well, but, one of the guard spots is going to be Stuber.
Right.
And then, honestly, I'll probably eat my hat if the other guard spot isn't Carson Barnhart.
Yeah.
Just based on the talk that he's been getting. Now, I mean, if Corrigan does beat all those guys out, I'll actually you know, I'll feel okay about that because he did beat all those guys out. It's a different situation than quarterback because there's, if you get through five or six other guys to be the left guard or right guard on this team, you're probably a pretty good player, even if you are a walk-on. So
yeah, an offensive line is a place where that happens more often than at other positions.
Yeah.
Well, and Corkin was on top of the depth chart before the Mayfield news, at which point Barnhart was going to be playing right tackle. So
Barnhart's going to be on the line. I'm mostly ignoring pre-Pads depth charts.
That's a good point.
But, you know, the offensive line situation now is, I was fairly comfortable with it before Mayfield left, and now that he's back, I'm, again, fairly comfortable with it because you have two guys who have experience on the field where they looked decent in Ryan Hayes. You have Stuber, who played against, you know, Ohio State 2 years ago and looked fine. Like, those guys have good reasons why they haven't been playing yet because they were behind NFL draftees. They're the right age. They're the right shapes. You know, I think those guys are very good bets to be good Big Ten players this year. And then you just need a center, which is always the most nervous thing. And then the other guard spot, I just don't even, doesn't even register as a potential concern.
They have so many bodies to throw at it that I'm not particularly worried about it.
Yeah. Sure.
Speaking of guys who came back that kind of make me feel a lot better, Chris Hinton's parents said that they agree with the Big Ten's decision and they think this was handled correctly, which gives me warm fuzzies.
I mean, honestly, they were maybe the most outspoken pair of college football parents who didn't sound like they were message board posters. For them to say that, yeah, this makes sense, this is something that we approve for our child, makes me feel like the Big Ten did do a good job. But also, having a potential defensive tackle, any defensive tackle, is massively important.
Particularly a five-star entering his second year when usually those guys will blow up.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan's problem is they have Carlo Kemp, who will be a solid player. They have Hinton, they have Mozzie Smith, and then it's like...
Smith has not even, like, gotten a whisper of practice hype.
Yeah, and then there's Donovan Jeter, who has again gotten some practice talk because he's reshaped his body, was... I mean, his first college football game where he played a lot, I think, was against Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And that went... Mm-hmm.
Not great.
Not well. Fairly poorly. And so this is kind of last chance saloon for him. And you don't really have a lot of help elsewhere. You might move a defensive end inside, but it's just not a great situation.
Still getting talk. So a guy who was an offensive lineman less than a year ago.
Yeah, that's the terrifying kind of hype, right? Like,
right.
This guy was a scout team player of the year. Well, that's not bad. As an offensive lineman.
Yeah. and, like, you know, we saw Spate against Alabama, and Alabama is a hell of a test for your first start, but it's still not going to be ideal, and Wisconsin's going to do anything that Alabama was going to do last year.
Yep. I mean... It looks like a pretty solid defense with the exception of defensive tackle, which if they get Hinton becoming a five-star guy in year two, that they'll have the potential to survive. And then without Ambry Thomas, cornerback is just like...
Yeah. The latest Sam Webb thing is that they're toying around with Daxton Hill as a slot corner for the most part, maybe even outside corner, and potentially bringing in a freshman at safety, and that did not fill me with warm feelings.
No. I mean, the thing is, you did bring in a true freshman who seems like a perfect slot corner in Andre Seldon, and then I mentioned Seldon to Sam at some point when we were on TK for the Hail to the Victors thing, and he brought up DJ Turner as a guy who the coaches really thought was going to break through this year. And since we didn't hear anything from him last year, I was kind of, you know, not feeling the DJ Turner.
Well, Turner was hurt last year.
Well, they don't tell you this, right? Like, it's just like, this guy's not playing. There's no injury report. We don't know these things.
Right.
So it's tough to project a guy who...
I mean, you need three corners to have any, and the fact that they're, like, you know, now, just now starting to talk about Jamon Green and Jalen Perry, who got, like, no mentions the last couple of years at all, That's telling me, number one, that like some of the guys that they converted to cornerback are not even close to ready. Like George Johnson converted there last year. We have not heard a peep about him. I mean, even Dennis is a freshman. You're not expecting anything from him. But like Darian Green-Warden and Andre Seldon were supposed to come in and maybe climb up the depth chart, and they very clearly are not.
Especially if they're using Daxton Hill. It's really early for them, and guys, the coaches are really reticent to talk about true freshmen until they tend to like prove it multiple times.
Except for they're literally talking about true freshmen safeties when
no other bodies there after they move Dax Hill. Like once you get past Sammy Faustin, there's no other names left. So those were the names that had to come out. I actually believe the Makari Page hype a little bit just because they seem to hype him up more than Faustin.
Well, and Ronnie Bellamy uses exact same terminology as Don Brown playing the exact same position.
That's important. If you're going to put a freshman on the field very early in his career this season, Makari Page has a huge leg up because all the freshman stuff where you're learning the playbook, he's already got behind him. Now, if you're playing slot corner, I think you can probably get away with just knowing that you're supposed to be doing one of three different zone coverages or man-to-man, right? So I think that's, you know, Seldon's a guy who I think you could see come through, and then Page is, I mean, if you look at Dax Hill, could he play cornerback? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredibly quick hips. He has got the long speed. You put him on the boundary and tell him to play inside leverage. There are worse things, right? Like,
if this is how they get their best 11 on the field and also maybe get Hill in more of a position to make some plays closer to the line of scrimmage if he's playing the slot, I don't mind that. And the Ohio State game poisoning my brain this much makes me think that maybe not having as much overwhelming talent at corner might get Don Brown to mix up his coverages a little bit more. And I'd appreciate that.
That is very much a silver lining right there.
I mean, he did hire Bob Shoup, who is like, if you're going to hire somebody to teach you how to do zone blitzing, he is probably top five in the country as far as people available for that. And Brian G. Mary has done nothing but 3-3-5 defenses his whole career. So like they brought in two guys who have been running zone defenses with the best for a long time. I mean they've got to be somewhat serious about it. I also think that like if they're mentioning Faustin right now, that may be just good news for Faustin. I mean, it certainly means he's ahead of the freshman. But he's a guy who was like super, super raw, right? He was from another country and then moved to Florida, I think, when he was a kid.
He's definitely from Florida. I think he's Haitian or Dominican. He's from the Caribbean, I believe, originally.
But right.
I think he moved here a long time ago and was just sort of a normal high school recruit.
No, I remember him being extremely raw coming in, and that was always kind of the talk about him. So it's possible that as a redshirt sophomore now, he's finally clicking.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Ace, where the talk out of the secondary doesn't fill me with warm fuzzies. And part of it is we've been incredibly spoiled at cornerback for the past half decade, where we just have this never-ending conga line of dudes, and then
they're still playing Brandon Watson when they had those guys.
Well, Brandon Watson was a very good college cornerback until he was ruthlessly exposed. That was the number one defense in America
until he was ruthlessly exposed.
Yeah, it's hard to know that your number one defense in America is going to get completely eviscerated.
Yeah,
but anyway,
moving on.
I think this segment has hit on all of the practice points. So before we devolve into a full on season preview podcast, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to have a gimmicky top five that people in Lincoln, Nebraska, are going to hate because they hate everything.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E, lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
You know, if I go out like that, it's a good way to go out.
Yeah, why not?
The nice thing is these are recorded on Zoom, so I could actually put out the video of this.
Oh no. You didn't tell us that.
The best part is that I know I like have to like psych myself up so there's this period of like heavy breathing before I do this.
Like it's, Brian rubbing his temples.
Yes, and like gripping an imaginary I don't know what. globe that I intend to destroy in my hands. Anyway. All right, Seth, you're up.
The Big Ten should realign their divisions based on the order you joined. Which basically switches Michigan and Nebraska.
Does it?
Yeah. Yeah, so the original seven would be Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Illinois, Purdue, and Minnesota. And then you can have the new seven, which is Ohio State, Nebraska, Michigan State, Penn State, Rutgers, Maryland, and Indiana.
That is,
and we can have...
I kind of like
cross division rivalries. Like Michigan can play Michigan State every year. Wisconsin, Ohio State can play every year, and I think you end up with a pretty nice even schedule. There, everybody's got their rivalries around them, and Yeah, we're kind of with our old friends that we started the whole thing with.
You could call them the Legends and Laggards.
Hey-o.
What? Topical?
I mean, if Nebraska wants to complain about their schedule, then let them have some time in the Big Ten East.
But we're getting to that.
We are getting to that. Seth has already done his ace, your hot take.
Great lead-in, thank you.
You're welcome.
Michigan State and Nebraska will face off in the 7-seed versus 7-seed game in this year's Big Ten Showcase.
That's bold. I mean, the record is still extant.
And so is the Illinois.
also, and Northwestern looks terrible this year.
Yeah, but Michigan State's roster, and everyone just has it out for Nebraska, including the Big Ten, so let's go. It'd be the funniest of all possible matchups, in my opinion.
Also, the Maryland has Talia...
Tagovailoa?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Who might be eligible, but might not. And then all of their other quarterbacks, they're like down to Max Bortenschlager already, basically. So
He's gone.
No, there was like the spirit of Max Bortenschlager, which will never leave.
He's eligible.
Yeah.
It's like Taco Pants.
Here we go. All conferences should have a worse team playoff, and the losers of those games should play in a worse team college football playoff.
Holy crap, I would watch that.
You would! Rutgers versus Oregon State versus
Arkansas?
Vanderbilt? Arkansas? Arkansas, that's a good one.
I'm feeling Tennessee might sneak in there. I hope Holly Anderson is not listening to this podcast.
Baylor,
if so, our friendship is over.
Gets to go every year because they're not
because they're the worst.
Yeah. If you enjoy this segment and would like it to continue, you should patronize Fuego Box. They'll send you 3 hot sauces a month, chosen for flavor, not merely heat. You can go to fuegobox.com/mgoblog and get $10 off your first month. All right, folks, we're into gimmicky top five time, and in honor of Nebraska, we have a very special Nebraska-focused gimmicky top five, which is the top five things Nebraska should be complaining about instead of the fact that they still have to play Penn State and Ohio State like they were supposed to.
Like they're a member of the Big Ten East.
like six teams do every year. Well, five. You guys get it. You guys are all over it. Seth, you're number five.
Scott Frost has never finished higher than third in his division.
Isn't that the thing they say about Jim Harbaugh?
Sure.
Except he's actually finished higher than that.
Exactly.
That's true.
But you could say that about Scott Frost, because he has not finished anything higher than really third in his division.
Well, except the 12-0 UCF season.
Well, I mean, in his
Big Ten.
Big Ten.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, if we're not counting Jim Harbaugh at Stanford, we're certainly not counting...
What kind of clown conference are we discussing here?
Yeah. Well, the Big Ten West versus the ACC. AAC.
That's
fair. I wouldn't... Go ahead.
Ace, number five!
They not only have zero Great Lakes, which I find to be a massive failure for any Big Ten school, but less than 1% of Nebraska's land is covered in water, so they don't even have good lakes.
You really went with like a geography bee.
Yeah, Michigan's
thing
at 41%.
Here.
We are kicking ass in the lake department.
41% is
what, of the 40... land area is covered of Michigan is covered by water.
What?
I think we have the most shoreline of any state, don't we?
Certainly of the landlocked ones.
No, if you like lay it all out, we like beat everybody by a good margin.
No, I think you're right. It's either us or California.
Alaska.
Shh.
What?
Continuous 48.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like you can't really count it as shoreline if like you can walk on the water that you're talking
and
about.
And who has Alaska played anyway? Nobody. That's the answer.
My number five is that Michigan fans are still talking about Scott Frost's mom. That's completely unreasonable.
Is this Michigan fans or just the rivals board?
Hey, I had a long conversation with Sam Webb about how we should just let it go. Which resulted
so the rivals and 247 boards. And maybe our board.
I mean,
okay, so maybe it's a lot of Michigan fans.
We may have a site tag for this.
So if Bill... Moose. Is his name Moose?
I think it's Moose.
Moose?
Whatever. I'm not sure how to say it.
Bill, the athletic director of Nebraska.
Bill moans a lot about crap.
All right, thank you. Yeah. If Bill, the athletic director of Nebraska, came up and he was like, hey, Michigan fans are like obsessed about this letter from 20 years ago that Scott Frost's mom wrote, I'd be like, oh man, he's right. We gotta do something about this. So he's got my vote in a hypothetical counterfactual where he's not just complaining about the schedule. Seth, you're number four.
Scott Frost is too loyal to defensive coordinator Eric Chenender and can't keep his star assistants. Like, they just had to go through a new offensive coordinator, and Troy Walters took a lateral move to the Bengals. They can't keep the guys on that they want, and he's just too loyal to this supposedly star defensive coordinator of his.
That took research. Like, you read some message board threads for that.
And some of us deeply care about crapping on Nebraska.
No. Well, yes. You guys have really proven that.
Some of us are also, within range of Nebraska talk.
Oh, like your kids or something? They're Nebraska fans?
No. But one of the guys weird. I work with for our ads owns Husker Max.
Oh,
so I'm
that's
getting
like you got the inside dope.
Yeah.
All right.
Say that.
Ace, you're number four.
They got rid of the nickname the Bug Eaters around the turn of the 20th century, which would have made for some incredible home field shirts, if nothing else. So, come on. Don't ditch the Bug Eaters.
Who was the head coach of Nebraska when they chose that name?
No, that one I have no idea. Was it John Heisman?
It was Fielding Yost.
Oh, it was Fielding Yost. That's great. So add lost Fielding Yost to Michigan to the list.
My number four is being the Big Ten West team to make a bowl least recently.
Yeah, that one's rough. Just from a pure factual basis, extremely brutal.
Purdue.
Northwestern. Illinois.
Northwestern won the division.
Illinois.
Won like 9 overtime games in a season and won the division. You're all not even going to the Bad Boy Mowers Poinsettia Bowl. It wasn't a poinsettia, it was some other flower. Gardenia, is that a flower?
Is it poinsettia or poinsettia?
I don't ask. Ask Ace.
I'm not a gardener. No. I do not have a green thumb.
All right. Seth, you're number three.
Scott Frost is getting fewer wins relative to the talent on the roster than any Big Ten team save Maryland. So 24/7 has a talent on roster metric. Nebraska has been fourth or fifth for years in the Big Ten, usually fourth behind like the Big East three. And when Scott Frost took over, there were 24 four-stars on the roster, which is more than any other Big Ten team save Michigan and Ohio State. And he's not getting any wins out of having all this talent on his team.
What's the
How
Maryland
much of
that
talent
situation?
Is still on that? His team? Didn't all the
Maryland had
leave?
Like a couple good. I'm just going off the 247. Have you guys sensed my theme at all yet?
Crapping on Scott Frost over and over again.
Do I have to spell it out? Or okay, I'll just wait and you guys will figure it out.
Is it an acrostic?
No.
If
someone does an acrostic on the MGO podcast, they're kicked off the MGO podcast.
All of my top fives are going to spell butts from now on. That's what's going to happen. You guys can't stop me. Ace, you're number four. You're three. Number three.
I just have the Longhorn Network.
Okay. Because that's why they left the Big 12?
Basically. I mean, they got just, kind of crowbarred on out of there by Texas. And with Texas just making a big old power grab, and then Nebraska going, hey, we're going to go to a conference that respects us, damn it. and then they went to the Big Ten, and then nobody respected them.
Yeah.
They didn't get to keep Colorado either. Like, I would have taken Colorado. They used to have a great rivalry with Colorado.
I think they played some non-conference games.
They have, but I mean, it's not going to be the same thing.
Well,
They're two crappy teams that don't have any stakes on the table. Who cares?
My number three is UNO has hockey and you don't. So
that's a good one.
That's a good one, too.
Omaha.
And a very Brian answer.
Well, just look at it from the perspective of Penn State hockey. So Penn State basketball, constantly depressing, terrible, 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 plays in a building far too big for it. And then they add hockey. Hockey sells out a building, has a great atmosphere. They're pretty good. They've made the tournament. They're a top 15-20 program, despite being very young.
It's not on a satellite campus.
Yes, yeah, well, whatever. Nebraska hockey could be the same thing. You could be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a bigger name than a lot of college hockey schools. You have a
couple of Great Plains hockey recruiting.
There's a USHL team literally in Lincoln. There's one in Omaha. You have access to some pretty good recruits. You know, you'd have an entertaining, not inherently depressing winter sport that you could enjoy. Instead, you have one team in Omaha, which has historically been pretty middle of the pack, and doesn't really do very much. Yeah. Seth, you're number two.
Scott Frost cannot win the big game. So here's the list of Nebraska wins since Scott Frost took over. Minnesota, Bethune-Cookman, Illinois, Michigan State, South Alabama, Northern Illinois, Illinois, Northwestern, and Maryland.
So is this all tropes about Michigan that you're now turning on Scott Frost?
There you go,
yeah. Ace. Hooray.
I will point out that Nebraska's most recent win over a team that was ranked at the time was a eventually 4-8 Oregon team with Brady Hoke at defensive coordinator.
Oh, boy. That doesn't count.
I forgot all about that.
Oh, what a magical time.
Ace, you're number two.
Seth sort of took this one, but the last time they held any of Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, or Penn State below 35 points was in October of 2016, and in that game they still lost to Wisconsin.
Yikes, that's like Bill Callahan never left.
Pretty much. Probably should have held on to Bo Pelini.
A true fact that is also terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My number two is not making the tournament in 2018. This was the year that the Big Ten sent only four teams to the NCAA tournament, and Nebraska went 13-5 in conference. They were a 9 seed in wins above bubble, and were a 5 seed in the NIT.
This was the Taron Petaway team, right?
Yes, it was.
They were good.
They beat Michigan, which was a top 10 KenPom team. They had a couple of other marquee wins. They were nowhere near the bubble in any objective measure, and they didn't get in.
And Tim Miles might still have a job if they did.
That's true.
Probably not, though. It got rough there.
If I was a Nebraska fan who wanted to complain about conspiracies, complain about the fact that we never get respect, that basketball team, a 13-5 Big Ten team, not getting in is it. Seth, you're number one.
Everything the haters say about Jim Harbaugh that I haven't already mentioned is actually true about Scott Frost.
That he killed that kid on Breaking Bad?
Yep, did that.
Did that. He also killed a guy on Friday Night Lights. He's just running around murdering dudes.
Also killed somebody on Fargo Season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy is out of control.
And then married Kirsten Dunst. Wild.
Still out of control.
Yeah.
That is even more out of control. Because you know Kirsten Dunst has done some terrible things.
He's also, you know, supposed to be an offensive genius, and his offenses have not been at all interesting since he got there.
Thank you for pulling us back in, Seth.
I mean, just look at her face. She's got ridges.
They were right off the tracks again.
A nose. How can you trust somebody?
She probably killed Nixon. I think that's...
The timeline, it lines up. It lines up.
Got don't blonde dump hair. That, check us.
I don't know if Scott Frost was alive, but his mom certainly was.
Mm.
Kirsten Dunst is Scott Frost's mom.
It runs deep.
Ace, you're number one.
The introduction and standardization of steroid testing.
Oh.
It's not like that totally coincided with Nebraska getting way worse in football or anything.
Is it? Like, standardized? Because we've always been talking about how the bowls are.
I mean, not necessarily standardization, but they've, you know, it's kind of been incorporated into college football to the extent that you can't get away with, say, maybe the rampant usage that was suspected around programs like, say, Nebraska and Michigan State, to name two totally random programs that we never crap on.
At least in the bowl games, you can't get away with it.
Yeah. And those are important. So Nebraska, you know, wanting to win those, maybe got a little less juiced.
Gun control still hasn't happened, though, so they still have that going for them.
But Tom Osborne is no longer there to lock them away when you run into the office with one.
Man, you went that you just went hard, man. That was like maximally hard.
I mean, all true facts, though.
Now watch me try to go harder. The number one thing that Nebraska fans should be complaining about is Nebraska, the state.
There we go.
Someone has tried to drive through this thing before.
I say this as a person who lived in Denver, Colorado, until he was about 10 or 11, and drove to Michigan on an annual basis to see family. And it's just this subconscious uptick in the landscape that makes you feel like something interesting might happen in 2 hours. As you enter Colorado, after having passed through Nebraska, the never-ending expanse of nothing, 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 there's a Runza, nothing, 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 another Runza. If there's anything wrong with Nebraska that is more important than the fact that their entire state is flat as a pancake and full of corn, I don't know what it is.
Amen.
Bah! Bah!
Put that in your press conference, Bill, whatever your name is.
Bill Mosey Moose, etc. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk recruiting.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics. Within Alumni Online Communities, it's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
If you like your apples sweet and your streets are not concrete, you'll be in your bed by 9 every night. Take your hand-spanked corn-fed gal and your best friend's four-eyed pal to a treat right down the street that's dynamite. Now let your conscience be your guide. If you put your foot inside, you wish you left your well enough alone. When you got hell to pay, put the truth on layaway and blame it on that old crazy bone. Crazy bone.
Crazy bone.
Crazy bone.
Crazy bone.
Where you wish you left your well enough alone. or when you got hell to pay, put the truth on their way and blame it on that old crazy bone.
So we've had some more recruiting events. That's the wonderful thing about recruiting, is that there are always events. Massachusetts linebacker, this is going to be very disrespectful, but I have forgotten his name.
Casey Finney is the one who decommitted. The good news is now you don't have to remember that name anymore.
Not intentionally disrespectful. Now I will always remember his name, Casey Finney. Flipped to Boston College, which is a nice piece of symmetry, because I think when he committed to Michigan, there was Boston College bloggers who were like, what the hell? you can't do this. And
well, he was one of three guys who committed to Michigan all at the same time who were like very low-ranked three stars at that time. So there was TJ Guy, and there was Dominic Jadis. Since then, Guy, I don't know if his rankings have blown up, but like the scouts are all over him. Like, they say he's quitty.
Yeah.
And Jadis is being ranked as a defensive end, even though he's already up to 275 pounds, and Michigan has been very clear that he's going to be at least a defensive tackle when he comes in, if not a nose tackle.
And he's filming every dang thing he does on his front lawn.
It's true. There's more practice video about this guy out there than anybody in the country.
Is he under an overpass like Julius Welshoff?
No, we need to send a suggestion to him.
That video is gone off the internet. I don't know how I'm supposed to talk about Julius Welshoff without him like balancing on a string underneath a highway overpass in Germany. Anyway. Go ahead, Seth. This was not a productive
tradition. Anyway, we kind of knew that about those guys. Like, Guy was a dude that, like, you know, okay, we hope the right
guy was a look dude. At this guy again.
Oh, there it was.
Guy is a dude. And Jadis is, like, at least plausible, especially when you need DTs. And everyone kind of, when we looked at Casey Finney, the response was, okay, maybe that guy's a fullback, but we don't have fullbacks anymore, so.
Weren't you just advocating for Michigan to take some guy and make him a fullback last podcast?
Yeah. The newest commit is a 2022 guy who is
a 4-star version of Casey Finney.
Basically, yes. And because they both play in Massachusetts, they're both compared to each other. And I am still advocating for this, by the way. My hot take stands that Ben Mason needs to convert Josh Gattis back to the school of fullback tree, because it is good stuff when a fullback hits you hard and creates a gap.
All right. The other major news is in basketball, where Harrison Ingram committed to Stanford. Obviously, a pretty big miss, especially because Harrison Ingram projects as the kind of 5-star who sticks around at college for a few years. Would have been a nice add to the roster. You know, at this point, Michigan just needs a center, really, in basketball, and then they can just swing for the fences with whoever. But it doesn't really seem like there's a whole lot out there to swing at this point.
Yeah, not necessarily. It was disappointing just because this seemed like the perfect fit in terms of what the program kind of needed, sort of a stabilizing force when you've had a lot of roster turnover over the last couple of years. Ingram seemed like a really ideal guy to come in and be maybe your go-to scorer for a couple of years. It's obvious that Howard, you know, is going to keep taking cuts at big time guys, possibly more the guys in this range than in the top 10 tier now that the G League thing is out there. So I'm encouraged by like the direction that he's going in and what he's able to get in place before he cuts at these 5-stars. Obviously it'd be very nice if he started landing them and getting them to actually put ink to paper when he does. I don't think there's a ton of shame in losing a guy to Stanford, if that's given what Harrison Ingram was looking for, a guy who had Harvard in his final five and Howard. That's not a recruitment that you look at and go, this is a typical type of recruitment that we're going to lose. That's just one you kind of chalk up to, okay, that kid likes Stanford, and you keep going.
I don't think Michigan was kind of banking their seasons on him coming anyway. Like, he was maybe not as high on the board as a 5-star to them.
It is extremely irritating for Michigan to start losing guys to Stanford in a different sport.
That is totally fair. It was annoying. I would have rather lost him to Howard and just been like, oh, like, no one had a chance except the HBCU. Cool. But Stanford. At the same time, like, is this how, like, this wasn't like the last cycle where a lot of what Michigan was doing seemed kind of based around Josh Christopher being assumed to come in. And yeah. then when that fell apart, all of a sudden the entire roster outlook changed. Like, this is not that. So, and there's also still plenty of time to bring in somebody that who they find as a suitable replacement. Who that is, I have no idea.
Well, they're definitely recruiting a couple of high rank centers, and then the presumed sixth or seventh spots in the class can just go to whoever they run across, and there'll be guys who emerge and guys who decommit. And I think you're probably going to look at another top 100 prospect at a random position, and then they're going to pursue a center very, very hard. Back to football. Any movement in the near future there, Seth?
Well, the NCAA extended the dead period through December, which kind of really sucks for all the guys who are planning on maybe getting on campuses in fall and making their decisions. So this class is going from having a lot of decommits to maybe having a lot of transfers later on, especially once they get on campus and find a bunch of freshmen who have been there for a year who have the same eligibility.
Oh, yeah,
as they
it's going to be just a complete crap show.
This cycle is
going to
be a total mess.
Yeah.
Complete mess.
Yeah. It does help Michigan with guys like Donovan Edwards, who like really wanted to go and see Oklahoma. Oklahoma's close to getting a five-star running back, which will probably mean Donovan Edwards is out for them, which then just brings it down to Georgia, who does already have a five-star running back in their class. So,
and Georgia's a place you definitely want to stay away from right now. So.
Yeah, and other guys like Rashawn Benny, who's like just visited Michigan a gazillion times and like can't get out and see Penn State again or Ohio State maybe. And then it kind of hurts us with like, you know, trying to hold on to Jaden Hood, who still has not visited Michigan. He's the linebacker commit that Miami's going after. Minnesota was still involved in that one. His teammate Jonathan Burroughs, the cornerback, our only cornerback commit and the only cornerback it looks like we can possibly get. He says he's pretty solid, but, you know, he's still not visited either. So this it hurts in some places and helps in other places, but keeping those guys in the fold, Jaden seems like he's going to stay, but, you know, we're kind of just watching to see if Jaden Hood is going to flip or if Michigan can hold on to him. I don't think they're out of it by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's definitely an open recruitment now.
All right. Well, do we have anything else on the recruiting front to... I know it's a dead period, so there's not a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, we lost Damon David. That was like the safety that Michigan found, who was like a two-star and not ranked guy, and then all of a sudden blew up into a four-star in the last few weeks. Oregon offered, and he jumped on the Oregon offer within a couple days. So that was kind of like the last defensive back that they really had a good shot at, and kind of looking bleak out there until 2022 when there's some legacies and a five-star and...
Yeah,
five-star legacy. Like they're looking in good shape to start with cornerback recruiting in 2022. I still haven't got my head around all the 2022 offers. Well, I think the next guy who might commit might be a 2022 linebacker from Traverse City.
All right. So, brief hockey aside, Thomas Wheeler has put out his final rankings for the 2020 draft. Thomas Bortolo is at 33. Brendan Brisson is at 35. They got a couple of defensemen kind of down lower. So not only is the 2021 draft just going to be littered with high first round Michigan players, but you're going to see a couple of guys go in the first or second round in this draft, and they're small. So they have a pretty good shot at sticking around for two or even 3 years, thus further loading Michigan's roster with really, really high end players. So should be fun. And now that there's going to be football, there's going to be hockey as well. So that's going to be good for everybody, especially me.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Mace Hambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Do you know about corn sweats? Corn sweats are a cooling mechanism similar to when humans sweat. In the summer months, an acre of corn can sweat up to 4,000 gallons in a single day. And this turns Nebraska into a corn hell swampland, even though there's no water there. Have a great day, Nebraskans.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
That's great!
You'll be a Michigan!
I mean, takes so hot they could come from USA Today's Christine Brennan when discussing the Big Ten's return to play scenario.
Okay, all right. You know, if I go out like that, it's a good way to go out.